ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. President Biden says help is on the way to civilians in Gaza.
In the coming days, we're going to join with our friends in Jordan and others in providing airdrops of additional food and supplies.
An official says the first of the drops could happen as soon as tomorrow. The judge in Donald Trump's Georgia election interference trial hopes to decide in the next 2 weeks if Fulton County DA Fani Willis disqualified herself by having a relationship with an attorney that she hired for the trial. The largest wildfire in Texas history has now burned at least a million acres and left at least two dead. A blizzard could dump up to 12 feet of snow in California's Sierra Nevada mountains. Thousands are still in line at a cemetery in a suburb of Moscow to pay their respects to a Russian opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, as riot police look on. Almost 100 people have been arrested nationwide. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Some changes may be coming to Wisconsin's Office of School Safety if it doesn't get more money. Attorney General Josh Call is asking lawmakers for more money for the office's 24-hour tip line. Federal money is keeping it open for the rest of this year. Call's plan would use money the state gets from concealed carry permits after that. $32 million cut from diversity offices is now going to workforce development at Wisconsin State Universities. Lawmakers on the Joint Finance Committee took the final step yesterday. Democrats are slamming the Republican maneuver.
It was never proposed that this delay was intended to find additional resources to assist all students. This delay was created in order to remove resources from certain students.
Representative Tip McGuire. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For 1490 The Eagle Lacrosse, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Fire conditions remain elevated in southwestern Wisconsin because of ongoing drought and current windy conditions, as well as a lack of plant growth this time of year. 86 wildfires have happened in Wisconsin so far this year, including three yesterday. Through the end of February last year, there had only been seven wildfires across the state. The DNR says to use caution when burning anything outdoors, as it's still dry and the high winds could spread fires quickly. Burn bans are in place in several areas. A bill to ban the sale of PFAS chemicals in everyday household items in Wisconsin was introduced by Senator Brad Paff this week. The bill, if it became law, wouldn't take effect until 2028. Another bill would give the DNR power to enforce DHS groundwater PFAS standards, as well as provide grants for testing and cleanup of public and private water wells. A Republican-backed proposal for PFAS cleanup is expected to be vetoed by Governor Evers, due in part to how it limits the DNR's enforcement ability. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The Todd Almost Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay. Go ahead.
The city of Green Bay is one of the best places in Wisconsin to live. Plenty of people that are Wisconsin nice.
Totally agree. Green Bay is kind of swing territory between the two parties, but people in Green Bay work together. I mean, people aren't asking themselves, am I wearing a red hat or a blue hat? They're wearing green and gold hats.
The Todd Almost Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Bucks get another win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Hornets in Charlotte 111-99. How nice was it to see the Bucks pass the ball around on offense? Doc Rivers.
It sure is nice. You need your stars to be the guys to make the right plays, and they did that. So Giannis and Dame started it. And, you know, Brooke tonight, extra passes. Bobby, extra passes. Pat Connaughton walked by me in the third quarter and said, is this what you mean by good to great?
College hoops. The Badgers men's team hosts number 13th ranked Illinois tomorrow at noon at the Kohl's Center. Women's basketball, Iowa's Caitlin Clark announcing she will enter the WNBA draft this year. Baseball, the Brewers beat by the Rangers 7-5. The NFL scouting combine continues in Indy. Clemson defensive back Nate Wiggins, ranked one of the best, asked if he'd been interviewed yet by Green Bay.
The Packers, yes sir. Their defense is like what I like. Man to man, press man, following the best receiver, lock him up. That's what I like to do.
Defensive back Nate Wiggins with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
A
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and mild tonight, low mid-30s. Mostly sunny and even warmer tomorrow with record highs in the mid-60s and breezy. Another record high possible Sunday, near 70, windy and partly sunny. A chance of a shower Sunday night and into Monday, cooler Monday afternoon, high upper 40s. Currently 51 degrees.
The Todd Alma Show.
Green Bay's a fine town, but I'm just telling you, you're better off to take a horse. Don't drive in Green Bay, and for God's sake, don't get a parking ticket. So how about this? We find out how much revenue does Green Bay get from parking tickets, and we say that the Packers are going to donate that, and we're going to have free parking in Green Bay. How about that? Todd for mayor of Green Bay.
The Todd Alma Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. What lacrosse and Western Wisconsin is talking about, you're soaring with the Eagle. Eagle 1490 WLCX.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Whoa! Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. It is another TGIBP. Thank God it's Friday. Busted Pencils, Johnny Lupinacci. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, man, it's Friday. I'm doing well. It's good to be back in the saddle with you, Tim, and a follow up on the heels of some excellent conversation with Educators Amplified on Wednesday. And I got the replay yesterday because, man, I don't know about you all listeners out there, but, man, there's some sicknesses going around. And
yeah, there is.
So the bug hit the station, and sometimes that's why we have good content to run. But we're back in the saddle tonight. It's Friday. Whew, it's feeling more like winter everywhere again. So that's good. Stabilize the weather. But also, it's Friday in, Celebrate Public Schools Week. There was some big stuff happening. I think we'll start there tonight, jumping in.
Wisconsin, you said,
what's up?
Wisconsin. In fact, Wisconsin Public Education Network 10-year anniversary party. Want to give particularly a shout out right there in Madison, Wisconsin, 300 South Bedford Street, Friday, March 1st, 5 to 8 o'clock. They're having a party. That's right now, Johnny. They are having a party. 10 years the Wisconsin Public Education Network has been in existence. They've been supporting public schools that entire time. We said this is, what a great way to cap off and end Public School Week in Wisconsin with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, making sure that, things are always rolling in the right direction when it comes to what's happening with public schools. So yeah, they're partying out there, Johnny. And here's the thing. You got to love an organization that comes together 10 years later now, still together, putting all of that emphasis, the kind of advocacy that public schools need, that deserve. Because we talk about this here all the time, Busted Pencils, fully led at Education Talk. When it comes to democracy, you got to be talking about public education, because the foundation of democracy rests on top of a thriving public education system. So whenever there's any type of attack or kind of, squishing or meddling with the public schools, you've got people like the Wisconsin Public Education Network that step in and sit down and say, hold on, these are our public schools. We have a duty to make sure that they are thriving,
because it's so important too, right, Tim? Is like we talk to so many teachers, and Tim, you and I have been teachers, and now we're teaching teachers. But the whole point is like we're busy, we're on the day-to-day grind. If we don't have organizations like the WPEN who are informing us, but also communicating our experience out at a level that legislation can hear and feels pressure from, then things just don't change. And so while they're partying today because we're celebrating public schools, they're also celebrating 10 years of advocacy. And that's so important because, Tim, as we know, when you're in the grind, right, unless you can, unless you're a teacher out there and give us a call, 844-967-2789, and share your story and help get it out there, right? Groups like WPN are working all the time to read the pulse of what's happening in classrooms, communicate that out, and pressure our legislators, pressure our, you know, state-level decision makers to better represent children and teachers and families in schools. So it's important work. I'm glad they're celebrating. I can't wait to hear how their rally went this morning in Madison. And we'll have guests on next week from the WPN who can tell us. So tell us about the celebration. What's happening? What's going on?
Yeah, what's happening? Give us a call from the party. I'd like that. That's I'd love somebody to give us a call from the party, you know, 844-967-2789. If you're at that Wisconsin Public Education 10th anniversary party, give us a call, man. Call Busted Pencils. Let's check in, because Busted Pencils is always making sure that we are checking in on everything that is about supporting public education. Yeah, Johnny. So you made me think, though. You said something about state legislators, state, you know, made me think, you know, we're on civic media, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we're old social studies kind of educators, you know, and boom. States, we're going to come back to that, though, because we have Tessa from with the Wisconsin Public Education Network on the line. Teacher Tessa, what's happening?
Hello, how's it going?
Hey, are you at the party right now where Wisconsin Public Education Network is celebrating 10 years?
Yes, I am at the party.
Oh, we got a party caller. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's happening there, Teacher Tessa?
So I should point out that I am former Teacher Tessa, currently of the Digital Organizing and Communications team at Wisconsin Public Education Network. And we are here in Madison celebrating our 10th year of coming together as public education champions across the state to advocate for, you know, what kids need and what they deserve. And so while today is, you know, a day of celebration, it is also kind of a sobering day in another way, because after 10 years, you know, we shouldn't have to be doing this work anymore. We would have hoped that, you know, the gaps that have existed and the needs that need to be met, you know, would have been closed and would have been met, but they haven't. So we, you know, are taking this opportunity to celebrate, but then to also, you know, stand resolute in our purpose and recommit to that important advocacy work moving forward.
Johnny.
Well, yeah, Tessa, thank you. Once a teacher, always a teacher, and especially from the position you are advocating and organizing for public education like you are. Thank you, Tessa, for calling and for the work that you do, right? And reminding us that while we're celebrating that work, and the great work out there, there's also a lot to be done. And holy smokes, 10 years, didn't it did some great, but it's only a dent in the bigger kind of changes that we need to make.
You know, Johnny, I mean, that is in Teacher Tessa. Yes, thank you. And don't say former Teacher Tessa. You're always a teacher, as Johnny put in there. Once a teacher, always a teacher.
Public educator, sure. Advocate, Tessa, calling from the party.
Calling from the party. But, you know, John, 10 years, right? And you can hear it's like they've been at this good, great work, but they're kind of going, boy, wouldn't it be nice if in year 10 we weren't needed? We weren't needed as an advocacy organization for public schools. I know what she's saying, because this fight, you know, for public schools, you know, Busted Pencils, the podcast started in 2014. Been doing this all these years, 10 years too, putting together the Busted Pencil show, right? You know, I had my son and daughter opting out of No Child Left Behind testing in 2011. And at that time, we thought that, man, it was bad. Things were rough for public schools. And I wonder now, though, you know, 2024, 10 years later, after all that, man, I don't know that I thought we were going to be having this same type of fight. I'm concerned. I like, you know, I'm always in it to make sure that we're advocating and doing this, but there is a sense of going, at what point are we going to win? Well, here's what I'm going to say. We win when we continue to recognize organizations like the Wisconsin Public Education Network and support them and push them to continue advocating for the schools our children deserve, the schools our families deserve, the schools our community deserve, the schools our states deserve, Johnny Lupinacci.
Yeah, Tim, and I'm going to layer right on top of that. While you're going in time, the schools our democracy deserves.
Ah.
Right.
And
Tim, I would love to say we were reporting that, you know, things have gotten radically better over these 10 years. And, you know, there's a lot of metrics out there that show us that's not the report we can throw out there. But no matter the conditions, groups like the WP, WPEN and other advocacy groups in a democracy are always essential. Right. We always have to be on watch because as L.A. Tom, one of our regular callers, reminds us that we are the government. Right. Mm-hmm. So civics 101 here in a democracy, listeners, we are the government. Educators, we are, you know, the stakeholders in democracy. We're the ones doing the foot soldier work of making sure it's a strong democracy. And so always we need that advocacy. I'm glad that WPN is celebrating because it's hard work and it's good work. And we need more of it. You know, Tim, it's great, too, when we hear from teachers like Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna every Wednesday, Educators Amplified, and the teachers that call in because they're reminding us there's a lot to celebrate, but there's a lot of work to do because conditions aren't exactly the way we maybe hope they were or think they are if we're not in schools every day. So, listeners, we're probably not all in schools all the time, right? So hearing those stories are ever important, and I'm so glad that we have them and public educators are out there doing the work that they're doing.
That's it. That's it, man. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Hey, if you want to call us too, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Civics lesson, though, Johnny, right there on Civic Media. We were talking about this before, you know, Teacher Tessa called. You were referring to, you know, the state legislators, state representatives. And I'm thinking, well, what do you mean the state? Why? What is so important when it comes to public education that the state is where we really want to put our advocacy efforts? You know, I'm just putting out a little civics lesson there. I think you might be saying that there's a reason why we should be looking at the state level.
Well, and we're coming up on a break pretty soon, so I won't get too deep into it. But we could, something we could touch on tonight, Tim, is do a civics 101 lesson is education is a state right. Right. And so what's the difference between a federal right and a state right or a federal responsibility and a state responsibility? And so why are we talking about this at a state level? And but also, well, how has federal level voices become a big, big player in this, too? So when we come back, we'll get into that.
Absolutely, we will. It is Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. The number is 844-967-2789. Wisconsin Public Education Network 10th anniversary party out there in Madison. Hope you guys are blowing it up, rocking away. Hey, and if anybody else is still at that party, give us a call. Busted Pencils, fully leaded. When we get back, trending education news. Busted Pencils.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all. But not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said,
I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life. And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban, letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
It kills me not to know this, but I've all but just forgotten what the color of her eyes were and her scars or how she got them.
We always say we don't want to know about your scars. That's all right, though. If you got them, show them. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. 844-967-2789. Tim from Rise Against, thanks for that intro. We always love it when Tim gives us that intro out there, Johnny. Okay,
always.
Education. Yes, you know, we're doing a Civics 101 lesson on civic media right now, referring to public education, and you really laying out the importance of state advocacy. And in fact, you even pointed out and said, public education, state right. Give us a little bit more understanding on.
I'll give you the brief one because we don't need to take up the entire Friday hour on this. In fact, we can. In fact, we will, and we have.
Well, in fact,
we continue to have guests on who help really illuminate this. But for us to think about, and it's important to remember because it does get a little foggy at times, and there's a reason why. You know, at the base level, education is a state right. So some things in our country are federal, right? So the federal government like weighs in, and every state in the union, you know, has to fall in line. Education is a state right. So state by state, right? The government of the state is, you know, oversees education within that state. They fund it. And they oversee it. They make decisions about it. Furthermore, we emphasize local, like education isn't only just a state right, but it's also further localized into districts, right? And that's why we've had like school board members on. It's why we talk about, you know, referendums on this show, especially for Wisconsin right now. So many referendums on the ballot. But why locally education is also sort of governed at a local level at your district. So you have the district and the state. The state is the highest level sort of, you know, with a strong voice and authority on what gets taught, you know, when kids are going to all the school related and public education related decisions are state to state. They differ across states, but they're a state right. And that's why we talk about advocacy at the state level being so important. It's also really important at your district level because that reports to the state in certain things. But the districts have to file, by and large, the sort of rules laid out by the state. Now, Tim, here's where I'm going to throw you a curveball.
Okay.
And this is this is that conversation I love to have with my neighbor. And I know you have it with your neighbor because I know your neighbor, right?
Yeah.
But there's always this argument in sort of what's big government, what's small government. If we think about states and district as small government, like if we go back to the earliest times of, you know, forming our democracy and thinking about like what was going to be a state right versus a federal right, and there were arguments about education that go way back to the Federalist Papers, right?
Over,
you know, you had Monroe, who represented big government, saying things like, hey, you know what, wealthy people would have time to make decisions about education and big decisions from a federal government kind of standpoint, like the big brother of things, could really kind of have a great, and the idea there was that there was not really a need to compete. Right. They'd sort of already, you know, had their accumulation of wealth and land ownership, and they could really make decisions in the interest of the common good from high up and centralized. And Jefferson, and I'm not giving these guys a free pass because, you know, the historians in us know.
All right. I know.
These guys weren't exactly saints. Right.
No.
But you have the Jeffersonian sort of the Jefferson perspective that said, no, hold on. is the everyday people closest to the schools and communities and what he would call ward democracies. Decentralized small government should be making decisions about education. So they landed on that, and that's sort of been where it stayed. States have the right. However, we've brought it up on this show. This is interesting, and I love this because LA Tom brings it up often, and we've brought up federal policy, right, has kind of an authority too. And it's sure for a long time been a silent authority until it became a little bit more of a powerful one through federal policies. And here's where it's at, Tim. It's mostly through the money. If your state wants federal funds, right? Mm-hmm. And this is where I hold big government, you know, contempt. Because this is not me, you know, siding with Republicans or Democrats. This is across the board. Big government wants to empower states to have education be a state right, right? Then stop offering the dollars and the funding linked to states following federal policy. And so when you start to think about when we say, well, education is a state right, but I say federal government also has a say. And the say is really in terms of that states only get funding and resources from the federal government related to education if they follow the federal policies.
So are you insinuating the potential that the federal government might have the ability to put some control over states and public schools the use of the purse strings? Is that what you're saying?
The purse strings, exactly. They say, you know, when we say follow the money, and this is where, you know, LA Tom calls in regularly and says, we need to really expose the corporate interests in school policies. And that's one of the ways we can think about it. If we have a big government that's corrupt by corporate interests, right, that are help shaping what those policies and purse strings are, then states often have to decide, are we going to accept this money or not accept this money? So the question then comes up is, how much freedom and autonomy do states really have? Of course, by law, they have a ton.
I was going to say, let's cover that, though, quickly, the law, because you keep saying rights. I just want to pull up everybody, wherever you're at, you know, Wisconsin, Washington, you know, you'd pull up your state constitution. I want to point that out there, Johnny. Can you talk about rights? That's where you will see in your state constitutions the right to, when you say typically it's a free and adequate education is the line there that really free says
it costs money.
Free access. But it's a guaranteed right of all children in that state that the state is to take care of public education. So that when you hear us say it's a state right, we're not going like states rights. It's like, no, understanding that the right to a public education is enshrined in your state level constitutions. There is no federal, as you pointed out, Johnny, a little history lesson there. In the federal constitution, there is nothing pointing towards education as any type of right. And so leaving it out there. And so you can see that you great little civics lesson there.
Yeah. Right.
We put this one, you know? Yeah.
Cause it gets murky. It gets confusing. Hey, is the federal government, you know, calling the shots on education or are our states? And the answer is both. And so that's why it's ever so important to understand that and to get into it.
Well, I got a great example. When, you know, in fact, here we go. K-12 dive, Johnny. Let's do a little bit of
trending news stories.
And this is a great time for an applied civics lesson to school. Texas policy allowing school chaplains spreads to other states. Whoa.
All right.
Chaplain. Okay. In case anybody doesn't know, chaplain, that would be a person of the cloth, a person of God, a person, you know, a priest. Some people go, wait, you mean like Father Jim? Yeah. Father Jim. They're allowed in the public school. Some people go, no, wait. How can a chaplain be in a public school? Public schools are ruled by all these other things. It's crazy. Who knows? I don't know, Johnny. We're going to talk about this because I have a feeling that there's the potential that when we talk about chaplains being in public schools, there might be a little bit of a push and pull between me and you on these things there.
Oh, definitely. Especially how you're defining chaplain. I mean, you're setting it up to be one specific kind of thing. But yeah, we'll dive into it when we come back. Let's go.
Let me get back. 844-967-2789.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris will talk about the economy and apprenticeships when she visits Wisconsin next week. Her visit to Madison will be her second trip to Wisconsin this year and the sixth time since taking office. Observers expect Wisconsin will be one of just a few states to tip November's presidential election. You've heard of inflation, but what about shrinkflation? Senator Tammy Baldwin tells Civic Media's Chad Holmes companies are putting less product in their packaging but charging the same.
Wheaties went from a family box of 16 ounces to 14 ounces. With some of the dish detergents, they actually haven't shrunk the size of the bottle. They just put less liquid in it.
Baldwin's Shrinkflation Prevention Act would empower lawyers and regulators to fight back. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
1490 The Eagle Lacrosse. I'm Jimmy Cuska. A bill to ban the sale of PFAS chemicals in everyday household items in Wisconsin was introduced by Senator Brad Paff this week. The bill, if it became law, wouldn't take effect until 2028. Another bill would give the DNR power to enforce DHS groundwater PFAS standards, as well as provide grants for testing and cleanup of public and private water wells. A Republican-backed proposal for PFAS cleanup is expected to be vetoed by Governor Evers, due in part to how it limits the DNR's enforcement ability. La Crosse's local Badger Honor Flight chapter, Freedom Honor Flight, announced the dates for its two flights this year. The flights will take place on May 4th and September 21st. The flights, which take military veterans to Washington, D.C., have a waiting list of about 600 people, and each flight can accommodate about 100 veterans. Donations to continue providing the local Honor Flight program are encouraged and can be made at freedomhonorflight.org. The forecast this weekend calls for sunshine and near-record temperatures by Sunday. No precipitation expected.
After my wife died, I felt like I lost everything, including my love of fishing. But one day, my granddaughter called, and I realized I still had a lot to look forward to. I got referred to a psychiatrist who explained depression can happen to anyone. Getting help doesn't make me weak. It makes me stronger. I just wish it made me better at fishing.
Mental health care is working for Diego. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Paramount Plus has announced a Ray Donovan spinoff 4 years after the show was canceled. People Magazine reports Guy Ritchie will direct the 10-episode series, which is slated for release later this year. The show Ray Donovan ran for 7 seasons and starred Liev Schreiber as the title character. A subsequent feature film was released that ended with Donovan headed to prison. There's no word yet on whether the Emmy-nominated Schreiber will appear in the new series. Heath Ledger died with a script in the bed next to him. The actor passed away due to an accidental drug overdose at the age of 28 in 2008. The New York Post reports that director Stephen Gagan, who won the Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar for the movie Traffic, told author Malcolm Gladwell on his podcast that Gagan wanted to turn Gladwell's book Blink into a movie starring Ledger. Gagan said after the Oscar-winning Ledger's death, he could not go forward with the project. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and mild tonight, low mid-30s. Mostly sunny and even warmer tomorrow with record highs in the mid-60s and breezy. Another record high possible Sunday, near 70, windy and partly sunny. A chance of a shower Sunday night and into Monday, cooler Monday afternoon, high upper 40s. Right now it's 48.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in, goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now, is to take a Kringle and go away?
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Providing you with an eagle-eye view of what lacrosse is talking about. You're soaring with Eagle 1490. Tell a friend.
We are Busting Pencils! Woo!
Ah, Busted Pencils. Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Friday night, 10 years Wisconsin Public Education Network celebrating out there tonight in Madison, having a great party. Doing a civics lesson on teaching of the state's rights of education. And then, Johnny, we kind of threw in there a little bit of an applied situation of trying to understand the policies and the legalities that work around these ideas here. And I put out the K-12 Dive article that came out today. Texas policy allowing school chaplains. Well, so in other words, it already happens, spreads to other states. And I'll just quote here from the brief. Texas school boards had until February 29th to vote on whether they want to bring religious chaplains into their schools to provide mental health support as authorized under a law that took effect in September. The measure, SB 763, required boards to reach a decision within 6 months of the effective date. There's a whole lot of school policy, locality, state stuff all wrapped up in that little thing. So, Johnny, okay, it does say religious chaplain. We were getting into this and going, you know, so I'll do the first. No religious chaplains in schools, man. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about that there is going to be some form of an indoctrination occurring. I believe that the right to freedom of religion would be freedom from religion. And I don't need to have religious chaplains in the schools proselytizing to me.
Well, Tim, how do I put this nicely? Freedom freedom from religion doesn't exist, because diverse religions are mythopoetic narratives that help understand sort of how we believe we come into being or believe in certain set of beliefs of, you know, external afterlife. Even the non-belief system is a system. So like, we could say your freedom from religion doesn't exist in human existence. So good luck with that argument. Marxists have tried to make it for a really long time and have failed, because even in successful, quote unquote, you know, communist experiments to say, you know, there will be no religion in the government places, we know still exists. I mean, I got to teach in, you know, communist countries where, you know, families and students and stuff, they still had their religions. They just, you know, had to hide them. And so everybody has a system of beliefs that influence how they think, even those who are atheist or agnostic, you know, all of these. So I do agree with you that this is murky. This is a slippery slope, because if it means, you know, that, and we know the decision often means this, a green lighting of enforcing and persuading or sort of bringing more, you know, fundamentalist Christianity only into a public setting, then we have a problem with it. But I get really worried about like to me, the false like possibility that we could ever have freedom from religions. To me, public school spaces are spaces where we recognize the diverse cultures and the different religious traditions and beliefs that students, faculty, staff, our community have. So now,
but see that, and,
yeah,
you're advocating idealism too. The idea that in this public space of a public school, the diversity of religions is going to be something that we actually celebrate, that we put out there, that we put forward. Right. And there's just not a good history in this country of being, you know, diverse supporters of diverse religious beliefs. And when I see policy like this, I see some form of Christian nationalism slipping in here, using you, Johnny Lupinacci, to make the argument for them of saying, hey, we got to allow all kinds of religions in. So if a Christian chaplain wants to come in, we got to let him in.
No, and, no, no. And let me clarify when I say that. I mean, that our public schools. So when we get into the nitty gritty of why these policies have existed in terms of, you know, allowing chaplains into public spaces, also publicly funded hospitals have chaplains. Okay. To be a chaplain. And I think this is important when we talked about state rights and regulation, to be a chaplain in a publicly funded institution should, and in a lot of places, includes a commitment to non-denominational and to choice. So you can say, would you like, and what I mean by this is I think for a lot of folks, if you're speaking on this and you haven't, hopefully you haven't been in a school tragedy, but too many of us have been in a massive tragedy, whether it's been a school shooting, right? A death, a suicide of a student or a colleague member. And it's been, I think, important public service to offer to people the choice to have time with the chaplain or the choice to, and again, I know it's idealist, but it's also practical and existing in places that the chaplains are required to be non-denominational and in that crisis moment serve. And does everybody do that? I would hope, you know, yes, but I know that this is also a possibility of an opening. But Tim, here's my counter argument. The closing it in a system with a history of white nationalism as shaping it, as our schools have, the closing of diverse religions just allows for the dominance of the dominant one right now in schools, which is fundamental white nationalism.
It sounds, you know what, Cam from Nina is on the line. Cam, help me and Johnny out, man. Nobody ever thought Tim and Johnny were going to be on a disagreeing side on this one. Cam, help us out.
I'm pretty hard no on having any religion whatsoever in schools. I understand that people have their own beliefs and it's like a melting pot, right? To like challenge yourself and the beliefs of others, to have people that have different experiences in the school together. But I don't trust that anything with a chaplain being in a school, I really would be afraid of any kind of indoctrination at all, because students and, I mean, just children in general are very easy to, they're impressionable, right? So having that environment around them, I don't know. It's really hard. I grew up with my parents telling me religion is stupid. When I grew up, I thought, okay, I'm going to take a peek at like what the stuff's about, right? And I look at it and I'm like, wow, this book has been rewritten so many times. Yeah. It really feels like it just got rewritten every time someone really wanted to get something that they wanted. And I just, the fact that it gets taken as like some sort of fact, it's almost like, oh my God, like we know this stuff is ironic. We know this stuff is history wise. I don't know. It's just really frustrating that it gets pushed and pushed and pushed. And it's one thing to talk about culture versus your religious beliefs when it's everyone outside of it sees it and goes, okay, but I know the history on this. This feels like a con.
Cam, though, I mean, so you're kind of where I'm cautiously skeptical that there won't be any indoctrination. And John, you talked about, you know, the fact of saying that in these settings that they really, the chaplain, the religious chaplain, has to have a non-denominational approach.
Commitment.
Are you just really thinking that just because we said that it has to be a non-denominational, multi-diverse, chaplain-oriented, that's what's going to show up in the school? Or
I think one, I agree, and Cam's great for calling. Cam, thank you for calling and sharing, because it is difficult in terms of, I think we probably all agree, indoctrination has no place in our public schools. If you want an indoctrinating education, or you want one themed specifically on a religion, you go to a private school with that. In our public institutions, right, it's really important to uphold that these people ought not to be. Now, I'm not saying this is what is happening in Texas. I don't want to speak for the Texas, you know, motives here, or unnecessarily pick on Texas. I mean, you know, they got the saying, don't mess with Texas. But the idea here, I think, is important that Cam brings up. Like, no, none of these chaplains' role should be as to educate. They shouldn't be part of the curriculum, part of the teaching. I believe, and when I read this, I also have understand the court case against it, right? Because I think it is a slippery slope to the potential for that indoctrinating to happen. I see it as a possible choice for people who need or want a connection that's non-denominational and needs maybe that kind of space beyond the privacy of, like, you can have your breaks, you can have your after school. And I'm thinking specifically about times of tragedy, which are increasingly part of our school experiences. And I relate it to, and I just pose it out there because we have to be big picture about this and think about the dimensions of it, is, you know, this exists in every hospital. This exists in most of our courtrooms. You have access and choice. It's a part of recognizing every human's right to culture and religion. It's not one religion. And that's what we need to be really clear about. There's a long history that Cam and Tim are both referring to of, you know, the proselytizing into to this sort of conversion, you know, efforts of Christianity in our schools, I think, and other religions too. But I think really by and large, we need to be weary of this. So I agree with you and you, Tim and Cam, but I also put the perspective in there is like, there is really important rights that people have within those public spaces to it not being coercive or persuasive, but to access to it. And so, you know, I think of it like if it's pitched as, hey, we're going to stop what we're doing and close our books and have a 40-minute lesson from Chaplain Tom, who, you know, who's here to, you know, to help us through this moment. That's not appropriate, right?
Okay.
But if we have the ability to access those in a non-denominational way, I think it's really helpful and it's a human right. And also, if not used in indoctrinating and persuasive ways, it's saved lives.
Okay. So you referred to a couple of court cases, and if people have been paying attention too, you'd say like, yeah, a couple of these have been decided here. A lot of people, if you paid attention last year, the coach who was, you know, let go for praying, but then reinstated. And now the Department of Education, because of those court cases, which have blurred the religion line, here are some of the guidance that the federal Department of Education, federal, not state, federal, says teachers and administrators and other employees are not to encourage or discourage private prayer or other religious activity. While employees can engage in private religious expression or observance before school or during breaks, they cannot compel, coerce, persuade, or encourage students to join in the employee's prayer or other religious activity. And point number three, schools may take reasonable measures to ensure that students are not pressured or encouraged to join in the private prayer of their teachers or coaches. I hear Johnny Lupinacci saying, look, with that guidance, how could you go wrong?
I mean, I like it because it gives the opportunity for rabbis, for all kinds of different religious leaders who I believe in a perfect world, but I believe ought to be held to that they're there to serve their community in the non-denominational ways in the face of tragedy or need, can also provide, you know, some guidance and some grounding in our schools, our courts, our hospitals, our airports, these places.
All that right there. Oh, it's Busted Pencils on a Friday. It's 844-967-2789. Educators talking education. Man, Wisconsin Public Education Network, 10 years partying in Madison. Partying in Madison.
Call it from the party.
You know, but doing a little civics lesson, states' rights versus federal rights, public education, where is it? And then a little applied hist there. What are we going to do? Well, we'll do some more talking when we get back.
And we're going to rise above.
We're going to rise above.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. I have asthma. I'm at risk too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
You're listening to the Talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
You can't feel the heat until you hold your hand over
the flame. That's what you're doing here every Friday night, holding your hand over the flame, feeling the heat. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Okay, so chaplains, we're kind of coming down on that. No, Johnny, though, I made the mistake of saying I believe in freedom from religion, and yeah. You're like, dude, there is no such right. There is no such right. Okay. Let's do a little bit, though. I mean, the separation of church and state is typically what gets brought up in these situations. Sure. saying, look, I'm sorry, but the state and the church in this country are separate entities. And because of that, in public places, the church, you got to stay out of this. You can't be getting involved in things that happen at the state level, church, state, separation of church and state, civics lesson 101. I know people out there who are going, Tim, right on, brother. Thank you for bringing up the separation of church and state.
Yeah, Tim. And I think it's different than like the human right to religions, because it's the whole reason we have this, you know, this country as an experiment is, you know, a freedom from religious domination in general. So separation of church and state is, you know, insurance that one particular forced religious belief cannot become the government, right? And okay. So it can't have its beliefs then in not like directly influenced or connected with governance. So separation of church and state. You know, that becomes oftentimes understood as, so we should have no religions or no, religion shouldn't be anywhere. But yet we're reading so many myth, like so many things through, and I'll just say it, like a Judeo-Christian lens, right, in this country, which has been, you know, in some ways, a complete like ignoring of separation of church and state for, say, you know, indigenous belief systems or, you know, non-Eurocentric Judeo-Christianity. So for some different, different cultures other than those groups that identify on that we still experience by and large dominant culture or public schools as spaces that haven't figured out separation of church and state too well. You know, so right. I get into it saying like that, I think that's an important piece. And when I was teasing Tim a bit, because I like to tease Tim, because Tim knows, like, Tim's also more anarchist than he is Marxist, and I'm an anarchist, and together we love to be part of a democracy, which is a concession on sometimes our own radicalism, right? But the idea here is I tease Tim as a Marxist, and, you know, Tim may or may not identify as that, but, you know, there's often an authority of governance in Marxist experiments or communism, that, you know, communist states to say no religion is the opiate of the masses. And in some cases, religion has had a history of being really coercive and really, you know, a mechanism for asserting dominance. And that's highly problematic. To ban it doesn't solve that problem, right? And so the anarchist in me says, we open it wide up and we make sure that we have a responsibility to it isn't one way. There are multiple perspectives in this. And then our public spaces, especially, we're given the insurance that our diverse perspectives we bring, right, to those spaces are not, these aren't spaces of celebrating one or picking one and not the other or having days for those, right? But in general, they're sort of non-denominational spaces. And when I say that, I know it feels like it's only adhering to religion, but even the belief system of no religion is, in its sense, we could argue is a religion.
Oh, I know, and I've heard that. Okay, but separation of church and state, little factoid out there, not in the Constitution of the United States. That language does not show up anywhere in the Constitution. So when people are always out there going, it's a constitutional right, separation of church and state. No, it's not. It's not specifically laid out like that. You got to look at and see, where does this concept of separation and of church and state come from? And, you know, here again, you're looking at Jefferson in some real applied ways of trying to interpret how this comes across. But, you know, so there is, that's not me then saying, therefore, a religion and the state should be mixing. But for anybody out there going, it's in the Constitution. No, it's not. There is no, there's no phrasing separation of church and state in the Constitution. However, then I point this out, though, when I used to teach fifth grade, you know, guess what? Fifth grade and elementary school teachers getting them ready to teach one of the favorite, you talk about a Judeo-Christian cultural orthodoxy, Thanksgiving. Got to talk about the pilgrims. Got to talk about the pilgrims. You know what? I always kind of got a little bit in trouble because I always framed the pilgrims as the, you know, why did the pilgrims leave England? They wanted the ability to not be oppressed by a government that had a religion at that point. There's a history lesson there going. So, you know, the pilgrims said, yo, we don't want a state run by the church. Our religious freedom, our ability to practice and pray how we want, we're out of this place because right now that's not being, you know, so there, I don't know if anybody's listening going, Tim, did you just say that? Yeah, I'm telling you. You know, these are where these things get nuanced. They get, you know, as you say, mushy. They get kind of complicated. But man, when you say the anarchist in me, the anarchist in you, yeah, I do not necessarily, I don't identify as a Marxist.
Tim, come on, man.
I don't know what I identify as, you know what, a radical democracy loving person who's just always out there thinking that if you're absolutely convinced that you have the right answer, I'm probably going to guarantee you that there's some nuance
that's right.
That is going there's, to just, you know, and so the, that's
the
what it is.
The danger of a single story, Tim, the danger of a single story. And that's sometimes, that's exactly why we have to, you know, be open to these public spaces being truly public spaces in a democracy.
There it is. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Man, what a great week. Check it out next week with not the Wisconsin, but the Network for Public Education. Oh, our own astrophysicist, Dr. Ethan Siegel, Educators
Amplified,
trending news, and Friday Bash. Check you all out on Monday.
The talk that matters to you and fits your lifestyle.
Tune out all the yelling and screaming.
Come soaring with Eagle 1490.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. Biomarker testing was a turning point for me. By working with my oncologist, we were able to determine the most appropriate treatment plan. My fear was I wasn't going to be here to see my children grow up. That gave me hope, knowing that I have that chance. And I did. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. President Biden says he's hopeful, but he doesn't think Israel and Hamas can agree to terms of an